Welcome to Lessons in Mastery. This is Tony Robbins. For 20 years of my life, I've been obsessed with the question of what makes the difference in the quality of people's lives. How can people turn out so differently, even people with similar backgrounds? What gives someone the competitive edge? What makes somebody fulfilled? Why is it some people rise above all the challenges and become so much more? Now, those questions started for me 20 years ago because I was trying to figure out my own life. Like, what do I do? How do I turn what I have as a desire into a reality? And I was very frustrated early on trying to accomplish things, and I failed to achieve them, and I felt bad. And so I began to rationalize for a short time. I started thinking, well, you know, maybe people who succeed on a larger scale, they do that because they have so many more resources than I have. They had a better background, more education. They had a mentor, or they had money, or they had somebody that just really cared about them in their corner. They had a perfect childhood. And you and I both know that's totally absurd. That people that are given everything don't always turn out so well. Sometimes people are given all the money, all the background, all the education, a perfect child, a total love and support. Sometimes they're not challenged enough. They don't become anything. They never develop any emotional muscle. They never discover who they really are inside. And yet then we see people who have been given nothing virtually. If anything, they've been given pain. And we watch these people become the kind of human beings you and I personally would think of when we think of what is an extraordinary human being. The kind of people that inspire us as people, the kind of people who everyone in the world knows their name. What would you think of the future of a baby girl born to a 13-year-old mother with no father and no visible support? Well, it certainly wouldn't be what we'd call a bright future. Most people wouldn't predict something great. What if I told you that little girl would be abused physically and sexually several times before she was even 13 years old? And then what if I told you at 13 this little girl became pregnant herself and gave birth to a stillborn child? What would you predict would be her future? What if by 14 she was so frustrated inside she was being sent to juvenile hall for the kind of behavior she was indulging in? What would the future be? But most of you probably wouldn't predict a very bright future. You probably wouldn't think of this person as having a future that you well know. You wouldn't think of this person as Oprah Winfrey. That's exactly who she is. You see, it's not what happens. It's what you and I do with what happens that shapes our lives. And so what we have to be able to do is say, how are we going to live our lives? What can we control? We can't control the environment. I mean, there's two worlds really, right? There's the outside world, all the things we're trying to control all the time, and we inside feel uncertain because we know we can't control all the events of our lives. But then there's the inside world, the area you have absolute control over, the area that if you direct it, if you become the shaper of your mind, of your emotions, what you believe, what you decide, what you do, there's where all the power is in life. So in the tapes that follow, I want to share with you what I consider to be profound knowledge. And profound knowledge is not because it's so earth-shattering. It's because it's so simple. See, I live for that. I'm always asking, how can you make this better? How can you help someone be happier, more fulfilled, stronger? How do you get someone to take action? What is that distinction, that idea, that tool, that strategy, that the minute you understand it, you can immediately change the quality of not only your own life, but anyone you have the privilege to touch? That's my definition of profound knowledge. Those simple tools that we use immediately to change your life. Because, you know, so many of us have ideas, but we don't convert them into reality. So for more than two decades, I've been in pursuit of that unique human animal, that person called an achiever, those who've not only succeeded, but are fulfilled, those who've not only contributed to themselves, but to their family and to society. So whether it be a parent or the President of the United States, whether it be a Michael Jordan or a Nelson Mandela or a Mother Teresa or the beloved Princess Di, who I had the privilege to work with before she passed on, all of these people have shared with me things that help to create an extraordinary quality of life. And that's what this is really all about. So I want to challenge you right now, and I want to invite you that as you begin this program, do it with an active state of mind. Do it as if as you hear something, anything that's valuable, commit to yourself that right now you're going to use it. Grab the telephone and make a commitment to someone. Or pull out your time planner and write down what you're going to do. Or immediately go take action on any decision you've made or any change you've made. That's how you build momentum. So I invite you right now, join me on this never-ending journey towards a life of active mastery. A life where you not only succeed, but are fulfilled. Let the journey begin, and let's do it with passion. Who are you? Who are you really? Think about it. Your answer to that question is shaping your destiny. It's going to determine how you're going to respond to innumerable situations. Our beliefs definitely control our behavior. So the beliefs you have about one person, like a friend of yours, will determine how you interact with that person. The beliefs you have about a food will determine whether you eat that food. That's pretty basic. But the beliefs you have about people in general are global beliefs, and that'll affect all kinds of relationships. And the beliefs you have about yourself are the most potent beliefs of all. Not only the beliefs you have about what you're capable of, but the beliefs you have about who you are. Because you and I need to remember, it's not our capabilities that determine our behaviors. Our capabilities are constant. What we do is based on identity. I remember an interesting story that was told to me years ago that represents this idea of identity. It's the story of the frog and the scorpion. It seems one day a scorpion wanted to make his way across a river, and he saw a frog and thought, what a great way. So he called out to the frog. He said, Mr. Frog, he said, I'm a scorpion, and I need to get across to my family on the other side. He said, would you be willing to let me ride on your back across to the other side? It's the only way I can get across. The frog looked at him and said, I don't think so. He said, how come? The frog said, you're a scorpion. Scorpions sting frogs. Well, I'd get halfway across with you out there, and you'd sting me, and I'd die. And the scorpion looked at him and said, oh, Mr. Frog, he said, you're not thinking with your little frog brain. He said, if I stung you, he said, I'd kill you, but I'd drown too. He said, I wouldn't do that. I'd be killing myself. And the frog seemed a little confused by this and said, okay. He let the scorpion jump on his back. He started to swim across the river, and about halfway across, sure enough, the scorpion stings the frog. He can't even believe it. He looks at him, he's going down for the third time, and he turns the scorpion and he says, I can't believe you did this. Why'd you do this? I'm dying, but you're going to die too. Why? And the scorpion said, because I'm a scorpion, and that's what scorpions do. They sting frogs. What does this story mean? It represents one of the most potent forces in the human personality, and that is this. One of our strongest needs within our personality is to make certain that our behavior is consistent with our identity. Even if the identity we hold for ourselves is negative. What do I mean? Well, there's a very big difference between feeling stupid, doing something stupid, or knowing you are stupid. Now, that may sound like semantics, but it makes a huge difference in how you live your life. We all feel stupid at times. We all do stupid things at times. But if you make the jump from feeling or doing something stupid in the moment to believing you are stupid, that belief about who you are will color every single behavior you're involved with for the rest of your life. It defines you and it limits you. You see, the beliefs we have about who we are, our identity, creates the boundaries within which we live our lives. And it isn't limited to something like whether or not we think we're smart or stupid. You say, well, I would never say I'm stupid. I'm smarter than that. Well, maybe you put it in the area of that I'm a procrastinator. See, it's different to have been a person who's procrastinated at times or to procrastinate in the moment than to know you're a procrastinator. Once you decide that's who you are, that behavior will be consistent just because you need to be consistent with your own identity. It works in every context you can imagine. It's different to know that you've got 10 extra pounds on your body. That's different than knowing you're a fat person or that you're a compulsive personality. You got to be very careful of the labels that you create for yourself or you allow others to give you, because they begin to define your experience. They begin to change what you notice about yourself, what you're willing to try, what you're not willing to try. They define the way you live. I can tell you, I've met with people over the years who tried everything to make a change and had been even successful in changing a behavior, like let's say stop smoking or stop using drugs or something, but it was usually short term and it didn't last. Why didn't it last for them previously? And now I worked with them and we got something that now 2, 3, 4, 5 years later, it still seems to be working. In fact, there's not even a struggle. They're not working not to smoke. They're not working not to take the drugs. Why? What do we do different this time? Well, in the past, they tried just to change their behavior, but they didn't change their identity. They didn't change their beliefs about who they were as a person. See, I can show you how to get off drugs and not use drugs, but if you believe you're a drug addict and then you don't use drugs for 6 months, I guarantee you it's going to be a struggle because you're fighting who you are the whole time. And eventually there's a good chance you'll go back, or for the rest of your life, you'll have to go to sessions where you try to remind yourself that you can't use drugs. You know, there are plenty of people who've been addicted to drugs for years, hard stuff, and then one day they've quit and never touched it again. How did they do that? Wouldn't it drive you crazy until you figured out someone made a change like that? A change from Saul to Paul, where one day what you loved you now hate, and what you once hated you now love. That's an identity change. That's powerful. That happens when you no longer see yourself as a drug addict. See, you can't be a drug addict and expect your behavior to be easy to change. It's much harder to change who you are in most people's perception than to change a behavior. See, that's the shift. You have to become the kind of person who would never even consider drugs in a million years. Think about it. Isn't there something in your life that you would never do? I mean, never. I know one for me is I would never murder another person. I mean, there's not even a question in my mind about that. So the thing to think about is this. If you would never murder someone, in your case also, why wouldn't you do it? So it's unthinkable. Why is it unthinkable? Because I would just never do that. Why would you never do that? Because it's not part of your identity. It's not part of your beliefs about who you are. See, your beliefs about who you are define what you will and will not do. See, it goes way beyond what you're capable of. Are you capable of murder? Some people say, well, maybe I'm capable, but I would never do it. There's a big difference between capability and how you live. And closing that gap requires an understanding of identity, an understanding of how to stop pursuing the kind of person you want to be, and in a moment, suddenly being that person right now and from this day forward. By the way, you may be asking, well, Tony, why do people behave consistent with an identity that makes no sense? Because in our culture, consistency is constantly rewarded, and change is often met with pain. I don't just mean pain within yourself. I mean pain from society. Think about it. In our culture, what do we call someone who says one thing and later on they do something different? We call them inconsistent, a liar, somebody you can't trust, somebody who's wishy-washy. I mean, we could go on and on with the labels. Nobody wants those. We link pain to creating change, especially at the level of who you are. Hey, how come you didn't tell me you're that kind of person? Well, you might say, well, I've been changing. Oh, yeah, sure you have. But on the other side, what do we call somebody who stays consistent? Somebody says that they're a certain way and they behave that way over and over again. Sure enough, that person is trustworthy. That person, somebody's honest. That's somebody you can count on. That person is stable. So what this does is it tends to lock us into whatever identity we used to have. And that becomes a big limitation. Either that limit or the limit that comes from being successful. See, when we become successful, oftentimes we become superstitious. We don't want to lose what we've got. After all, we work so hard to be in this position. Somebody comes by and says, hey, you could change that. You could make it better. They go, wait a second. You don't understand. This is what's made me successful, being this way. Well, there's a great phrase that I kind of paraphrase from Einstein, and that is that really, in essence, the level of thinking that's gotten us to where we are is not what's going to get us to where we want to go. See, to get to where we want to be, we got to take on a new level of thinking. We got to know that what we've done up until now has been great. There's nothing wrong with it. It's fantastic. But to get to the next level, we've got to look at life in a new way. And one of those new looks is we got to perceive ourselves in a different way. Not just our capability, but who we are right now. Not someday, today. That shift begins the minute you begin to consciously define yourself, instead of letting the environment do it for you. Because think about it. How do most of us define ourselves? Where do we come up with our identity anyway? Well, it comes from a variety of environments, but maybe the best way to answer the question is ask a different one. How do you define the people around you? How do you know if they're a friend, if they're a good person or not? The way we define other people, the way we discover their identity is we watch them. We listen to them. We judge people's identity usually by their behavior. Isn't that true? I mean, think about it. Somebody treats you real harshly several times each time you're around, and pretty soon you go, I know that person. That person's a jerk. You know what the challenge is? Once you decide that they're a jerk, and if that becomes a belief, or worse, if that becomes a conviction where you know they're a jerk, nothing's going to change your opinion about it. Then even if they're really a nice person later on, they were just having a horrible day. Maybe they were being a jerk that day, but that's not who they are. Once you've defined them that way, guess what? Nothing they can do can change it. So you got to know that sometimes we do the same thing to ourselves. That's the danger. Sometimes we do something terrible, and we say, gosh, I'm a terrible person. Or we do something stupid, we go, I'm a stupid person. Sometimes we get caught in a pattern of behavior that's undisciplined. But you know what? If we start saying, look, I'm an undisciplined person, now it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. If now all of a sudden you start defining yourself as an undisciplined person, if that becomes your belief as to who you are, not that you're capable of being undisciplined, everyone's capable of that, not that you've been that way at times, but that's who you are, once you put that label upon yourself, now your future behavior and therefore the results of your life are going to be colored by it. So you got to be careful. I'll give you an example of how this has been used to manipulate people in a very negative way. During the Korean War, our American POWs collaborated with the enemy more times than any time in our history. Now, how come? Because the Chinese communists understood the power of identity. They understood that you can only get a person to do something by force so long. But if you can change their perceptions, if you can change their philosophy, if you can change the way they think, if you can change their belief about who they are, you can change their behavior permanently. And that was their goal. See, the American fighting man knew who he was. He had an identity. And he also knew if somebody tries to torture you, you know all you give them is name, rank, and serial number. And that's worked for gosh only knows how many years. But the Chinese communists used what they called the leniency policy. They decided that what they wanted to do was try a different approach. They would bring the POW in and sit him down and say, listen, you don't have to be afraid of us. You know, we're only your enemy because your government's attacking us. We're just caring people. We're just defending ourselves. Listen, we don't want to hurt you. Here, have a cigarette. And they'd sit and talk with the gentleman. And this American POW would be very suspicious. But after 4 or 5 or 6 hours of talking and having a nice conversation, he'd begin to get a little tired and a little exhausted, a little worn down. But these people were so cordial. They'd say, look, your government doesn't care about you. Don't you understand the kind of unrest that's happening in your nation right now? They said, we care about our people. They said, let me ask you a question. What's really not perfect about America? Are you going to try and tell us it's perfect? And the American POW would usually respond with, well, of course, America's not perfect. That's all they needed. Their whole goal was to break into the shell of identity and get you to make some very small commitments and then enlarge them. What do I mean? Well, they'd say, well, how is America not perfect? The person will say, well, you know, we have unemployment, I guess. You know, some people out of work. They say, well, let me ask you a question. In communism, do we have people unemployed? POW say, well, I don't know. They said, no, we don't. Everyone is employed in the communist nation. They said, do me a favor. Just write this down. Just to be fair. Write down, America's not perfect. The guy would say, wait a second. You want me to make a comment? I don't want to write that down. He said, well, is it true? You just said it. It's true, isn't it? The POW said, well, yeah. And he'd write down, well, America's not perfect. And they'd write down how America's not perfect. Write down that communism, we have people who are employed. And sure enough, out of exhaustion and out of compliance, without being forced to, the American POW would have a document now in front of him that later on he would even sign that would basically describe why democracy was terrible and communism was great. Now, he's got to be able to explain to himself why he did this. Remember, we judge who we are by our own behaviors. So sure enough, he looked at his behavior and said, I wasn't forced, I wasn't coerced. How come I put this down? Well, because it's true. Then if that wasn't bad enough, he would go back to his cell, and the other cellmates would look at him and say, what happened? You've been gone for 18 hours. You don't look like you're marked up. What's the deal? He said, well, they just asked me some questions. And sure enough, in a few minutes later, over the loudspeaker, the Chinese communist would read this essay signed by him. And they'd say, did you write that? And he would, well, say, yeah. And they'd say, well, how could you do that? Did they beat you? Did they torture you? What'd they do? And he said, well, nothing. Well, how could you do this? Well, the American POW would finally, at that moment, he'd have to be able to justify. So he'd say, well, because it's true. And that moment, the Chinese communists had accomplished what they wanted. His identity began to change. Because two things happened. He began to defend a whole other view. He began to believe that this was an accurate representation of his deepest feelings. He was simply judging a set of small actions that were orchestrated, directed without his awareness. But worse, now others saw him as a collaborator, and they would begin to isolate him, sometimes even physically break out and fight or beat him. Now who's the enemy? His fellow POWs. And as a result, he would collaborate secretly with the enemy on a larger scale again than any time in our history. This is the power of identity. We will behave consistent with our identity, even if our identity is negative. So we must be very careful about what we buy into. I mean, the classic example is with our children. The Pygmalion effect, I'm sure you've heard of it. What it is a research study that's been done over the years where they take teachers and they tell them that a particular student is absolutely outstanding, that they're a gifted child, for example, and that they'll need to be challenged a lot, though, because otherwise they'll just slough off. You know what invariably happens? The child becomes the leader of the class. Or if it's a group of children that they bring to the teacher, those students begin to excel higher than almost anyone else in the class, all because of expectation. What do you think that would do to you to have somebody tell you you're gifted? If you didn't get that gift earlier, why don't you give that gift to yourself right now? We're all gifted. All that is a darn label. So many children do poorly on something because they have a different strategy or because they don't understand something yet or it hasn't been communicated in their style. And then we assume they're learning disabled. They live with that label. And you know what? That label doesn't just affect them and their ability to learn. It affects their self-image. It affects the way they look at their lives. And all of us have wounds in this area. I just cleaned mine up because I got sick of it, because I realized it's all garbage. I get to determine who I am. The day I decided that was the day my life changed. And that's the day I want this to be for you. You know this already. You know it consciously. But you got to remember the power of a belief. You've got to tap into those beliefs that affect you most. And those are the beliefs you have about who you are today. Not who you're going to be. Who you are right now. So let me ask you that question again. Who are you? I mean, who are you really? There's so many ways you could define yourself. But how do you? Because the definition you have of yourself is creating the boundaries, again, that you're living your life within. See, what do you have a conviction about when you describe yourself? Who do you feel certain you are? Not what other people have said about you, not what people expect from you. In your gut, who are you? See, are you a leader or are you a follower? Are you a person who makes a difference or are you a victim? Are you someone who's constantly trying to figure out how to grow? Or are you somebody who is constantly looking for an excuse? Are you merely a collection of habit patterns? Or are you something deeper, something richer? Are you merely your past? Or are you who you're defining now? I would suggest to you that right now is a moment you could begin to ask this question and really begin to give the answer. Instead of saying, this is an esoteric tape, what the heck is he talking about here? Who am I? What is this stuff? I want some tools, Mr. Robbins. Maybe you could really stop for a second and really consider the answer. Who are you? See, when I ask the question of people, I usually get one of three responses. Either a blank stare, which is somebody who goes into trance, or I get the Popeye response. I am what I am, you know. But there are a few people who actually stop and they think about, who am I? How am I define myself? Because, see, we all want to be able to define ourselves. We want to show how we're different, how we're unique. Otherwise, you're no different than the person who's sitting next to you. How do you have a sense of identity? Identity is nothing but definition. And with identity come parameters, parameters of who you are mentally, emotionally, physically. How do you describe who you are to yourself? And what I'm really asking you to do is to ask a question. Just like Gorbachev did, I'm asking you to have some glasnost with yourself. Be open with yourself to ask the question anew. Who are you really? The way you're defining yourself is controlling how you're responding to this tape. It'll control your relationships. It'll control your occupation. It controls the way you think, the way you feel, and what you do. Now, how can you define yourself? Let me help you out with this so it doesn't just go off into the distance here. And if you're driving, while you're asking this question, notice what's going on around you as well. Don't go into a deep trance on me here. So how can you define yourself? There's so many ways. Or again, that's what identity is. To give you a clear definition, it's how you define yourself to yourself. How do you know you're different than your brother or your sister or your neighbor? What makes you different? What makes you the person that you can discern as being unique? Those elements that you use to describe yourself with conviction are the ones I call identity. So, for example, some people, when they describe their identity, describe themselves by their emotions. That's basically who they think they are. So a person will say, well, I'm a loving person. That's who I am. Or if I say, who are you? They might say, well, I'm a peaceful person or I'm an intense person. Some people don't use their emotions at all to describe their identity. Some people choose roles. Well, I'm just a mom. I say, what? Just a mom? A mom is so many things. What are you, crazy? Come on here. A mom has got to be everything. She's the best friend. She's the teacher. She's a student. She's fun. She's outrageous. She's a stimulator. She's an entertainer. I mean, she's everything. You can't just be a mom. You better expand your identity. But see, a lot of people go, well, I'm just a mom. I'm just a dad. Expand that view. But notice, how else do you define yourself? Start with how you already define yourself. Maybe you do it by your job. Somebody will say, well, I'm a doctor, or I'm a priest, or I'm a salesman, or I'm a lawyer. That's one of the challenges. See, they don't say, I practice law. They say, I am a lawyer. So they go home at night and they cross-examine their spouse and wonder why they got problems. You know, we got to get beyond that process. You got to know that you're more than what you do. But again, just start with what you have. I keep jumping to the next step. I want to expand you, but let's figure out how you already see yourself. So you need to start with that so you're aware of where you are. What else could you use? Well, you could use your roles. You could use your identity as emotions. You could do your occupation. What would be another category? Oh, metaphors. Some people use things like, I'm king of the hill, or I'm at the bottom of the rock pile. You know, those metaphors really shape a lot of how you think and how you feel and what's possible for you. What else could you use? Well, some people describe themselves based upon the feedback they've had in their past, something like, I'm worthless, or I'm special, or maybe by their spiritual beliefs, I'm Jewish, or their looks, I'm beautiful, I'm ugly, I'm old, or maybe by their accomplishments. You know, I'm the 1960s Spring Valley High homecoming queen. Hello! Some people have lost track of who they really are. You're not your past. Some people define it by what they're not. Oftentimes I ask people, who are you? And they respond by saying, well, I'm not this, I'm not my father, I'm not my brother, I'm not like this person, I'm not like that. You know what? Part of how you define who you are that's different than other people's, what you're not. But don't make your whole identity based on what you're not, or otherwise you're pretty limited in what you are. Some people describe themselves based on their past, their failures, for example. Other people do it based upon their future. How are you defining yourself? Who are you? What's the essence of your life? I keep asking you this question because I want you to keep asking it of yourself. Keep refining the answer. And in a moment, I want you to pull over if you're in your car, or I want you to stop what you're doing, and I want you to stop this tape, and I want you to write who you are. Describe yourself to yourself so that once and for all, you can get an idea of what's going on unconsciously. Because here's the thing I don't think I've made clear. The biggest challenge with identity is most of us are not conscious about what our beliefs are about who we are. See, that's their power to control us. They're unconscious. But if we get really conscious about our beliefs and we stare at them and take a real good look, we'll immediately start seeing what the limitations are in our beliefs. And we'll also see some of the benefits, because the truth of the matter is, you probably have a lot of great beliefs about who you are as well. So right now, I want you to stop this tape, no more conversation, take out your journal or a piece of paper, and just write down the question that philosophers have asked for thousands of years. Who am I? And describe in detail who you are. And when you're done with that, take at least 5 minutes, minimum of five, and then come back here and let's talk some more. Stop the tape now. Welcome back. Now, I assume I'm welcoming you back, right? You really did turn this tape off and you really did do the exercise, didn't you? If not, go do it. Because if you didn't do that, why didn't you? Because you're busy? You're too busy? You said, Tony, I'm really busy. I got a lot to do. I don't have time to think about my identity. Give me a break. And more scary than that, do you do this in a lot of areas of your life? Do you unconsciously identify yourself as a person who listens to things and then doesn't act upon them? I doubt it. Because I think if you're the kind of person who listens to this kind of tape, you obviously are committed to make your life better. So now that you know who you are, who do you really want to be? See, however you limited yourself in the past or whatever, even if you think your identity is really strong, in order to achieve all that you want, who would you have to become? Think about it. Would you have to be more gregarious, more outrageous, more fun, more passionate, more disciplined? Whatever you have to be, you need to become it now, not someday. You don't need to make it a goal. You need to fuse with that identity. You need to start thinking, if I was this person, how would I breathe? How would I walk? How would I talk? How would I treat people? What would I do when I woke up in the morning? How would I speak to myself? How would I think about life? And then you need to think about this and literally fuse with it. Imagine stepping into the body of this person and becoming this person. And then immediately go out and act this way. I remember years ago, I used to tell people, listen, if you want to change your life, conduct your life as if you were a public figure. I said, think about how public figures have to be, how they have to live, how they have to treat people, what they have to do. And I said, if you do that long enough, the quality of your life will literally transform. Well, you know what? I became that person. I became a public figure, and I wasn't one. But now I am. It's an amazing experience. What's great about it is I don't have to behave any different than I have for years. The way you hear me now is the way I am. This is who I am. I don't have to fake it or act like it. This is who Tony Robbins is. So now when people see me in an airport, I don't have to be constantly monitoring myself and saying, well, am I being appropriate or am I going to be misinterpreted? I'm just being who I am. That identity is real for me. And you might want to take that advice again. You might want to think about, how would you conduct your life if you were a public figure? How would you be if you were already living your dream? See, if you'll start behaving, thinking, feeling, and knowing you're the person you've been pursuing, I can promise you many of the goals that are way out there, you'll start to experience them as a reality right now, or whatever is necessary to make them real will show up. For example, if you believe that you are an intelligent person, it's because you had an idea called, I'm an intelligent person, and at one point you didn't believe it. It was just an idea. It was like a tabletop with no legs. But then you took some tests successfully. People told you you were intelligent. You noticed you could figure some challenges out, and each one of these became a leg underneath your tabletop. So now the table is solid. It'll stand there. It's a solid belief. You feel certain about it. Well, that's the same way you can help yourself to change your identity. Go out and do some of the things that a person like this would do. Now, don't limit yourself to this technique. Because you can change your identity right now by making a decision. Now, for some people to decide, by the way, they need to go through a ritual. Throughout human history, people have used rituals to change their identity, not only within themselves, but the way other people see them. because the way other people see you and the things they expect from you tend to influence your behavior if you're not clear yourself who you are. You got to be careful. You got to have such a conviction about who you are that nobody can sway you. You know who you are inside, regardless of whether you're getting the results you want or not in the short term. But if you want to make a difference, look at what would be a good ritual. Again, if you look at the African culture, for example, I remember years ago when I saw the movie Roots and seeing Kunta Kinte, who's a friend of mine, LeVar Burton, who played that role so powerfully. But Kunta Kinte was part of a village, and how did a boy know he was a man? There was a specific ritual, so on one day, he transformed. The boys in the village kept talking about, they knew the day was coming. They heard stories that on the day you become a man, somebody came and put a hood over your head and they took you to this special place and took you through this ritual. And that's exactly what happened. And the rituals were varied. And one of them I will not describe, but I can only tell you it was somewhat painful, and it was a way for them to have physical evidence he was a man. He came back walking different, literally. And he was wearing a special outfit. And sure enough, when he came back, the whole village now, because he was wearing that outfit and had been through the ritual, knew he was now a man and began to treat him differently. Our environment reinforces or takes away from identity. That's why we've got to decide the identity we want within ourselves. Today, how do people know if they're a man or a woman? Well, I guess the ritual in our culture is drinking. In Judaism, how does a boy know he's a man? He has a bar mitzvah. The girls have their version of that process. So we've missed a lot of that in our culture. But we found ways to replace it. They're just not quite as clear. And maybe we found ways that are not real resourceful. Going and getting wasted on your 21st birthday may not be the most powerful way of being able to identify yourself as a person who's free to do what they choose. Maybe there's a better way. But regardless, think of what might be a nice ritual for you. Maybe it's something crazy. Maybe, for example, you have excess weight. You used to think of yourself as a fat person. As long as you believe you're a fat person, not just somebody who has excess weight, if that becomes your identity, that you're a fat person, sure enough, you're going to find it very difficult to change. In fact, you can do all the right things, but you'll return to that identity. You'll start overeating again or do whatever's necessary to get consistent with your belief for who you are. So maybe what you need to do is go through a ritual, one that's stronger than all the diets you've been on. Maybe you need to figure something out unique that'll really jar you. Like one day you burn all your clothes except one outfit, and then you go out and you buy all new clothes at a size that's reasonable for you to be able to reach. And you know you got to keep wearing that outfit till you get there. I'm only speaking partially with tongue in cheek. I mean, we need to get more outrageous in the way we approach things. The reason I've used the firewalk for years is because people tend to transform a lot of their beliefs about who they are. It's not the firewalk has any power. Anybody could walk on fire. You could do it tomorrow. And I tell people that when I first get to the firewalk. I said, you could do it right now. All that's stopping you is your limiting beliefs and having a little bit of strategy. But you know what happens? Intellectually, they know they're capable. Everybody knows they're capable. But it's when you do something, that's when you know you've changed. And what happens is they get on the other side of this fire and their brain says, my gosh, if I can get myself to do this and it's this easy, what else did I used to think was so difficult or impossible that now it's probably just as easy? It begins to change their picture of who they are. See, I know I've gone on and on in this tape. I'm getting across hopefully one singular potent message. And that is this. Your life is defined by your beliefs, your convictions of who you are. That is the essence of what's controlling you. And if you ever try to change a behavior and it didn't last, it's because you changed the behavior for the moment, but you didn't change the controlling force. Your perception of who you are, that is what's got to shift. And maybe for you it's subtle, and maybe for you it's huge. I don't know. But I can tell you this. The first step is what I said earlier. Become aware of the unconscious beliefs you have about who you are. And again, those beliefs are sometimes reflected in your behavior, sometimes not, so that's not the way to define it. Just sit down and answer the question, who am I? It's a question that philosophers have asked for thousands of years, and it's one you deserve to ask yourself and give it enough time. Spend at least 10 minutes answering the question who you are. I know you're busy, okay, but take the time to ask the question, and don't just give the Popeye response, I am what I am. Stop and think. And give some meaningful answers of the first things that come out of your gut. And even if you don't like them, like, you know, if you say something like, well, I'm inconsistent, or I'm a person that never falls through, write those things down. It's okay. The first step is to notice what you believe. And you know what? You probably have references to back up those beliefs. Remember, you can find references to back up the idea that anybody is a good person or anybody's a bad person. If you look for something, you'll find a reference to back it up. If you want to back up the idea that people are basically rotten and they'll rip you off, anybody has references to back it up if they want to. If you want to back up the idea that people are good people and they care, everyone's got references to back that up if they look deeply enough. So the fact that you believe something in the past does not mean it was true. just find out first what you've been believing about yourself. Write it down. Then step two, immediately begin to question those limiting beliefs. Say, is that who I am or is that how I used to act? That's a very important question. Just because I've acted that way a bunch of times in the past, am I my past or am I who I decide to be now? Could I change my entire life right now, regardless of how I've been in the past? And because I behave that way, is that because that's who I am at the deepest level? Is that who I am at the core? Is that the essence of who I am? I doubt it. Who we are is spirit. We're more than our physical bodies. We're more than beliefs. We're more than values. Somewhere inside of you, there's a part of you that's everlasting. There's a part of you that's never ending. You need to check in with that. When you start feeling overwhelmed, or you start feeling like, I can never accomplish this, or I'm just not cut out for this, remember, you're cut out for whatever you decide to be cut out for. You have the capacity. You are bigger than any challenge you could ever meet in your life. Connect with that greater source. Remember the miracle that your life represents. See, if you just remember what's going on inside of you right now, just for you to be listening to me, all the processes with a heart that beats constantly, pumping blood through 60,000 miles of blood vessels, that's what's inside of you. If you put them end to end, they'd wrap around the earth twice at the equator. Very thin, I might add, but it would still do it. The point of the matter is, this is the power that's inside of you. Who are you? You're a miracle. The fact that you're alive is a miracle. The fact that you're living in these times is a miracle. If you start realizing that you're a miracle, that you're a gift, if that becomes part of your definition of yourself without a big ego about it, then all of a sudden life has a different quality. The types of actions you take are different. The way you treat people is different. And the results that you generate in your life will be transformed. What is more important to you than the way you feel? What? Is there anything? You know, in my business seminars for years, I've asked people, I said, tell me anything you want in this world. And people always give me all kinds of different responses. And they'll say, well, if I had some food, I would feel better. Or if, you know, I made more money, I would feel like I had more power or more control or more freedom or more security. Or if I was in a better relationship, I'd feel more love. But in reality, they don't really want the relationship then. They don't want the money. They don't even want the food. They just want to feel better. They want to change the way they feel. They want to change the emotional content of their life in that moment. And I think it's real important for us that we take a new look at emotions, that we see that some of the emotions that we consider sometimes to be negative, the emotions that we think are most painful, may in fact be our best friends. They may be giving us signals that we need to make changes. If we heed these signals, and if we utilize them, we can change the quality of our experience and our life immediately. So just remember, emotions are the ultimate power. They start wars. They cause us to get married. They cause us to get divorced, to create children. They can even make us ill or they can make us healthy. In essence, the history of your life, the history of this world, is the history of emotion. Emotions are the core that call us to action and change our entire lives. So where do they come from? What's their real purpose? What are some of the most intense emotions that we experience day to day that shape our destiny and that most of us never really learn to master? And then how can we master them and how can we utilize those to increase the quality of our life? Those are, in essence, the questions I want us to answer together today. How do you deal with your emotions right now? I'm curious. Because I found that people deal with emotions in one of basically four patterns. Either one, they avoid them. They literally try to not feel. They try to not have to feel, let's say, the feeling of rejection. And there's a problem with that. What would you guess it is? Well, yeah, if you're always trying to avoid rejection, you're never going to succeed. Because anything in life that requires you to deal with other human beings on a massive scale, where you're taking a step forward and you're trying to create change, exposes you to a point where somebody may disagree with you. They may reject you. See, the ultimate fear of rejection keeps people out of relationships. They never get to have the feeling they do want, which is love or intimacy or a feeling of connectedness, because their fear of rejection keeps them out of it. So you can't ever avoid completely negative emotions. They're part of life, and they cause us to grow. Some people don't try to avoid the emotions. Instead, they go into the I'm going to endure it phase. Or worse, I'll endure it, but deny it. Those people usually try and disassociate from their feelings. They try to say, well, it doesn't feel that bad. But meanwhile, they keep stoking the fire inside themselves by thinking about how horrible things are, or how someone has taken advantage of them, or how they do everything right, but things still turn up wrong, and why has this always happened to them? In other words, they never change their internal conversation. They never change their internal focus or their physiology. They keep feeling like heck, but they try to pretend like it's not there, deny it or disassociate it. And inevitably, this erupts, because the more you don't listen to the messages of your emotions, the more intense they get. They keep hammering on the door louder and louder to try to get through to you. And all of a sudden, you feel worse and worse and worse. Or the third thing I see people do is they use it for competition. You got it bad, let me tell you how bad I feel. It's really going to make your life better. And I hear people do it all the time. Yeah, my work's so horrible, let me tell you how terrible things are. You think that's bad, I'll show you terrible. And sure enough, people get in a match to see how bad they can make each other feel about their own lives. You want to stay out of that place. Hopefully you go with a fourth way of dealing emotions, and that is to learn from them and utilize them. Now, where do they come from? Do they just attack us like a virus where all of a sudden we feel something? Or as we all know, they come from other people, right? For example, if you feel loving, it's because of what somebody else did. They came over and told you they loved you, or they hugged you, or they touched you a certain way, or they kissed you, and that's what made you feel love. Is that really true? The reality is, you feel loved because you choose at that moment to create those feelings within yourself. You allow yourself to have those sensations. You have some rules, some criteria that say, when XYZ happens, then I get to feel loved. And then at that moment, when all those criteria are met, somebody hugs you, kisses you, says they love you, etc., you then in your own body create these sensations that you call love. You release those sensations. You put yourself in that physiology at that moment. Conversely, if you feel bad, if you feel angry, if you feel overwhelmed, depressed, frustrated, lonely, all of these emotions are also created by only one person, you. You create them by the way you use your physiology in your moment, by what you choose to focus on, or to be even more specific, by the meaning that you attach to any experience in life. See, what we feel is not based on our experience, but again, on our interpretation of our experience. It's the way we represent our experience that determines how we feel. And look again at that word represent. It means, if we spell it out, re-present. In other words, something just happened. Now, after it happened, you take it in through your five senses, and you make a representation, another presentation of what happened inside your head. The way you represent those events will determine how you feel. So again, in this case, this woman took the simple act of a man opening the door with a smile on his face, and she represented it inside of her head as, he's trying to take advantage of me, he's trying to make me less than him, he's trying to dominate me in some way. We must be very careful of the meanings we attach to things, because those meanings basically determine the quality of how we feel in our lives. We must make sure that the emotions we feel are appropriate, that in essence they empower us instead of disempowering us. There are no negative emotions. There are no bad emotions. Every emotion serves us as long as we interpret it in a way that adds a powerful meaning to our life, something that moves us forward instead of backwards. And that's in essence what I want to do with you in this tape. So why do we have emotions in the first place? What's their purpose? Especially, why do we have these painful emotions? You might say, I know what these powerful, positive emotions are for, because I deserve ecstasy. Well, I agree with you. You deserve to feel great, and they're a reward system. And some people look pain as if it were the punishment system. And sometimes it is. When we don't follow our own rules, and we don't live by our own values, by our own life standards, then we certainly give ourselves pain as a way to keep ourselves on track, because we want to avoid pain. But I think negative emotions serve a very powerful, positive purpose. Negative emotions are a signal that a change is needed. Let's think about this for a moment. When you feel an emotion like fear, an emotion that most people try to avoid at all costs because it's just too painful, or any variant of that emotion like worry or concern or terror, when you feel those emotions are giving you a signal. Rather than just try to avoid the feelings, you should listen for and notice the signal and utilize it. The signal of fear is you must prepare. Boy, that's a valuable signal. It's in your body for a reason. It's saying to you that something may be coming in the near future that you better be prepared for, either prepared to cope with or prepared to deal with. That's valuable information. We don't want to deny that emotion. We don't want to avoid it and pretend it's not there. That's how people get in trouble emotionally, physically, financially, in their relationships. They don't want to feel the fear that the relationship's not working out, so they pretend it's still going great. Until one day they find themselves 5 feet from Niagara Falls in a boat with no oars and going, oh shoot, it's too late. They take an emotional fall, a relationship fall. Make sure that these emotions serve you. And the way to make them serve you, I think, is to realize that every emotion has a message for you. And what you want to do is not make it wrong, not avoid it, not freak out about it, not make yourself wrong for feeling it, but to do six things. Number one, identify what the emotion is. Two, acknowledge and appreciate the message it's offering you. 3, get incredibly curious about what it's offering you. In other words, how could you use this to make your life better? Is this really what you want? And do you need to change the way you're looking at the world? Do you need to change the way you're acting? Do you need to change the way you're communicating? And then 4, get yourself to feel reassured by seeing that, hey, you've worked this out in the past. You've made it through this emotion before. 5, get yourself certain that you can handle anything like it in the future by rehearsing using this emotion as a tool of empowerment. And 6, take action and change your whole life. Those 6 tools that I just whipped through real fast are, in essence, what we're going to learn to utilize, not just in changing how we feel, but using how we feel, even those negative feelings, to make our life better. So what I'd like to do in this session, at least just for the sake of our conversation and for our ability to deal with our emotions, is to take and create a model for each other, a model that I've created where basically I fit all emotions into 10 categories. Now, the challenge with this is we all have different labels for what a feeling means. So yours may not agree with the ones I'm putting down, but just for our ability to have a conversation and for our ability to deal with our emotions, we're going to say there are 10 types of emotions, just for the sake of conversation. Is that okay with you? I hear yes. I just hallucinate. That's another kind of emotion, I guess. But here are the 10 emotions, and I'd like you to jot them down. So if you don't have a paper and pencil, stop now and grab one. I'll wait for one moment. Moment's up. Welcome back. Here are the 10 categories of emotions. Here's the first one. Uncomfortable emotions. That's a pretty big category. You're right. But I'm basically describing here emotions that don't have a tremendous amount of intensity, but they do bug you, they bother you. Feelings of boredom, for example, or being impatient, or uneasy, or distressed, or maybe mildly embarrassed would probably fit under uncomfortable for most people. The second category of emotions would be the emotions of fear. Those could be things like concern, apprehension, worry, anxiety, feeling scared, or even terrified. These are all different types of emotions that we're going to relate, for sake of our conversation, to fear. The third category of emotion I call hurt. Any kind of feeling you would link to hurt. And we're going to talk about how most of our feelings of hurt come from a sense of loss. Fourth category, anger. And anger, again, has a large variety. Everything from mildly irritated to angry to livid to resentful to furious to enraged. Anything in that category we're going to talk about as an anger emotion. Fifthly, emotions of frustration. These are any emotions you would link to being held back or hindered in your pursuit of something. Sixth, emotions of disappointment. Anything that makes you really sad or defeated as a result of something you expected that didn't work out well. 7, guilt emotions. Maybe another way of describing them would be the emotions of regret. 8, feelings of inadequacy. Any emotion you've ever experienced that would consider causing you to feel like you're less than or unworthy would fit into this category we call inadequate. 9, feelings of being overloaded. Now, again, overloaded I'm using to make it soft, but most of the emotions you probably link in here would be feelings of being overwhelmed or even hopeless or depressed. Anything that makes you feel like there's more than you can possibly deal with would fit into the overloaded category of emotion. And lastly, 10, lonely emotions. Anything that makes you feel alone, like you're lonely, like you're apart from or separate from, would fit into this category. So again, the 10 are 1, uncomfortable feelings, 2, any feelings of fear, 3, any feelings of hurt, 4, any feelings of anger, 5, any feelings of frustration, 6, any feelings you would link to disappointment, 7, the category of guilt and regret, 8, feelings of inadequacy, 9, feelings of overload, overwhelm, hopelessness, or depression, and 10, any feelings you link to loneliness. All of these emotions, these categories of emotions, are there for a reason, and they're to give us a message that something needs to change. Now, one of two things has got to be changed when we're feeling any of these emotions. And before I tell you this, let's make sure you're enrolled here. How would you feel in your life if you knew, no matter what emotion you felt, you could go, okay, am I feeling uncomfortable, or is that a feeling of fear, or is that a hurt feeling, or an anger type of feeling, or a frustrated type of feeling, or a disappointed, or a guilty, or inadequate, or overloaded, or lonely feeling? How would you feel if you knew that in a moment or two, you could instantly get out of that feeling, no matter how intense it had been? Would that be useful? Then stick with me, okay, because I know this may seem a little bit cumbersome at first, so listen to me carefully. At any moment you feel any emotion, the first step you're going to always want to take to master your emotions, first step always will be to identify the signal. What I mean by identify the signal is figure out, if you're having a feeling, which one of these categories does it go into. So let's take a look at how this might work. Let's say something happens between you and a loved one, and as a result, you feel rejected. you look at your list of 10 here and you say, rejected's not on here, Tony. Well, step number one is identify which category it most fits. Well, when you feel rejected, you really could feel a lot of things about that rejection. You might feel uncomfortable. You might feel actually hurt. Or you might feel angry about it. Or as a result of rejection, you might feel lonely. What I'm trying to do is get down to the core emotion that really is controlling you, rather than just this giant word called rejection, which really isn't the essence of what you're feeling. As you go down and you look through your list, and by the way, I know you're not good at this list yet because it's brand new, but you'll memorize it simply by listening to this tape over and over again. By the end of this conversation, hopefully you'll know the 10, and I'll keep saying them again for repetition's sake. What we're going to call them from now on is action signals, because that's exactly what they do. They are signals for you to take action, to reevaluate the way you're perceiving something or the way you're proceeding, the way you're communicating your feelings to other people or the way you're behaving around other people or situations. In other words, they're going to tell us we got to make a change in order to get what we really want. And that's what these action signals are all about. They're not negative. They're not bad. They're there to serve us. But for now, let's come back to the example. We said step number one then always is identify the signal. That simply means where does it fit in here? So in this example, we've said that rejection really was just uncomfortable for you. Maybe what happened is you turned to kiss your husband or wife and they were busy reading or writing or something and they didn't really reciprocate. You felt, you know, kind of uncomfortable about that. You didn't feel lonely. You didn't feel hurt. You didn't feel angry. You just felt a little uncomfortable. The signal of being uncomfortable is calling to your attention a message. And the message of uncomfortable feelings is, one, realize you need to change your state. That right now, no matter what happens in the state you're in, you're not going to appreciate it. You're not going to be resourceful in understanding what things really mean. Say, for example, you're feeling in a state of being uncomfortable about that. You're going to start hallucinating. Well, gosh, my husband or wife, you know, they weren't really loving to me. You know, does that mean that they're not interested in me anymore? Does that mean that, you know, that our relationship's not as strong? We tend to hallucinate when we get an unresourceful state. So when you feel uncomfortable, first message from that signal is, hey, change your state. Second, clarify what you want. Immediately, you got to clarify what you want. That's what this signal is trying to tell you. It says, yeah, don't just be uncomfortable. What do you want? If you want your husband or wife to be closer to you, get clear that's what you want. And step three, immediately take action in that direction. And the way to take action in that direction is communicate your desire or do something that expresses it. Make sure you do something until you achieve what you want and you're no longer uncomfortable. It's literally that simple. Don't just sit around and go, gosh, I feel bored. I feel foolish. I feel insecure. You know, I feel kind of rejected. I feel uncomfortable. Say, great, I need to change my state. The fact that I'm uncomfortable is a signal. It's giving me a message to immediately change my state, two, clarify what I want, and three, take action in that direction. If you do that, you've conquered this emotion immediately. Let's say you felt rejected to the point where you called it hurt. You really felt hurt inside. Well, what's the message of hurt? When you feel the sensations you call hurt feelings, that signal is giving you a different message. And the message there is that there's an expectation you have that's not been met, and you have a sense of loss. That's why it's more intense than just being uncomfortable. You feel like you've actually lost something. Now, the challenge with this, as with all these emotions, is that when you identify the message, you must immediately clarify what has to be changed. Whenever you have what you used to call a negative emotion, you're now going to call an action signal. You know that that action signal is signaling you need to change one of two things, either your perception or your procedure. Now, let me clarify what I mean by that. Your perception might be, for example, that, gosh, you feel hurt. You feel like your husband doesn't love you so much anymore, or your wife doesn't love you so much anymore because, gosh, when you first met, boy, all you had to do was, you know, look at them, and they dropped their newspaper and came over and hugged you, and now they don't, and you have a sense of loss, and that hurts you inside. And that hurt is a lot more painful than the feelings of just being uncomfortable. The point, though, is this. Is this an appropriate emotion for you to feel based on this situation and this time with this person? And that's really the question we want to ask ourselves whenever we have an emotion. We know that when we have that signal, we need to first identify it, and then secondly, immediately appreciate this signal is offering us a message, and the message is we need to change. Again, our perception or our procedure. So our perception might be, person doesn't love me. Do we need to change our perception? Do we have some rules that are inappropriate in this situation? And the answer here probably is yes. Wouldn't you agree? This person is just wrapped up in what they're doing because they're just immersed. It doesn't mean they love you any less. What this emotion is telling you is you need to change your perception because otherwise you're going to feel pain for no reason. You might also look at this same situation as a symbol that you need to change your procedure. Procedure means the way you're proceeding with this information. In other words, what this may be is a signal to you that you really aren't communicating your real needs to your husband or to your wife. Maybe what you need to do is change your procedure, and instead of feeling hurt or instead of feeling uncomfortable, turn to your husband or wife and say, honey, you know, I know you're wrapped up in your work. I know you're totally immersed. I know you're trying to do stuff that supports the whole family here. But you know what? I just need, you know, 3 minutes with just you and I, because I really need right now to just feel loved by you. I need to hold you. I need to feel connected to you. Now, if that person starts to get upset, obviously you're getting feedback that your procedure still didn't work. You have to be a little more flexible, a little more creative, or maybe a little bit more loving in the way you do it. Or maybe change the timing in which you go about something. But that's changing procedure, changing the way you communicate. Or another way of changing procedure might be it's a signal that says that the way you're communicating your husband or wife doesn't make them want to make you feel loved right now. That your present behavior may be turning them off. For example, let's say you feel rejected by them because when you come in the door, they don't rush up and give you a hug. They're immersed in something. Now, how do you respond to that? Well, what a lot of people do when they feel rejected is they feel uncomfortable with it, or they feel hurt, or some people get angry when they feel rejected. Now, what's the message of anger? The message of anger is you have a standard for your life, something that's important to you, and it's not being met by another person or maybe even not being met by you. Sometimes we get angry because we're not living our own standards, huh? So let's say as a result, one of your standards is that people who love you, they run up and they greet you in your home. They don't do that today. Well, you feel angry. One of your standards has been violated. Something you believe important is not happening, and now you're angry about it. How do you respond now to your spouse who doesn't even know what's going on? Maybe you give them a dirty look, or maybe you make some snide remark, or you find something wrong with what they're doing. As a result, this person may very well purposely reject you. Now when you're feeling this rejection, you're feeling this hurt or this anger, and you say, okay, this anger means I have a message here, a signal. Signals I need to change either my perception or my procedure. Maybe you don't need to change your perception. Maybe they really are rejecting you deliberately. Maybe the procedure is not only how you communicate, but how you're behaving. Maybe you need to look and say, you know, I'm not treating this person in a very loving way. No wonder they're giving me this feedback. I need to change me. Are you following me so far? So we're always getting the message. We're identifying the signal. We're appreciating the message and knowing the message is telling us we either need to change our perception or our procedure, the way we're communicating, the way we're behaving. I know this may sound complex at first, but I play this tape back and listen to this little section a couple of times. You'll get this down. I want to change either my perception or my procedure, the way I'm communicating to this person, or the way I'm behaving, or just the way I'm looking at the whole darn thing and making it so I don't have pain. I need to look at things, communicate, or behave in a new way. That's the message of pain. Let me say that again because I think you'll get this one. If you're feeling pain, it's a message. You need to change the way you're looking at things and therefore what they mean to you, or change the way you're communicating your desires or needs to someone, especially if the pain involves somebody else, or change the way you're behaving, the way you're treating others, and that'll get you a new response. That's in essence the basis of all these action messages. They're telling you, you got to set a new outcome and move in a new direction. Otherwise, you're going to stay in pain. And by the way, let me mention something to you. If you ignore a message, if you ignore one of these signals, and these action signals, whether it be the signal of feeling hurt or fearful or angry or frustrated or disappointed or overloaded, that signal doesn't go away. It intensifies. You'll feel even more hurt, even more angry. It intensifies until one day you get smart enough to say, hey, I got to change something here. I got to change my expectations, the way I'm evaluating this thing, the way I'm looking at things, the way I'm feeling about it, or the way I'm communicating what I need, or I got to change the way I'm behaving, period. I'm going to keep feeling this until I make one of those three changes. It's that simple. Next, once you've identified the signal, i.e., you've been identified, you said, I was feeling rejected, and what that really means is I'm feeling uncomfortable, or it really means I'm feeling hurt, or angry, or lonely, or whatever. Then the second step is appreciate the message. Respect that emotion. Don't make your emotion wrong. So many times they say, well, I don't want to feel rejected, or I don't want to feel bad, or I don't feel angry, I don't want to feel hurt. Don't do that. Appreciate it. It has a message for you. It means you got to change. But it also means something very specific, depending upon which emotion of these 10 categories. So before I go any further, let me review with you what the messages are that each one of these 10 signals is giving you. We've already said that if you're uncomfortable, the message is simple. You got to change your state, clarify what you want, and take action in the direction of what you want. And immediately you won't be uncomfortable anymore. If you're feeling category number 2, emotions of fear, whether it be concern or apprehension or worry or anxiety or scared or frightened or terrified, no matter what intensity it is, any one of those still are fearful emotions, and fear emotions deliver one message to us. We need to prepare ourselves to deal with something or to avoid the negative consequences of something that's coming up, something that's about to happen, a situation or an event. Basically, fear is get prepared. Get yourself so you can deal with something. And that's a valuable message, isn't it? Now, the problem is what most of us do is we get fearful and we don't take the message. We either try to deny the fear and act like we're real strong, and all it does is get stronger and stronger, or worse, we just surrender the fear and we don't get the message. All we do is we get caught up in the emotion and we get more and more scared and we amplify it and we start thinking of the worst that can happen rather than figuring out, okay, what do I need to do to be prepared to avoid the negative consequences and make this work? For example, people have fear of failure. That's a valuable fear. It's saying get prepared so you won't fail. For example, you might have a fear because the IRS is coming to visit you and you get a little note in the mail. You get this feeling of anxiety. That's probably a useful fear. Right? It's probably saying to you, hey, you better go get all your paperwork in order. If you didn't have that message, if it wasn't painful enough, you might slough it off. It might show up and it may cost you a lot of money, not because you weren't accurate or honest, because you weren't prepared. Same thing happens if somebody asks you to give a speech and you get a little fear inside. Maybe it grows into anxiety. The more intense it gets, the more we tend to surrender to the emotion rather than get the message. That's why we may want to convert fear and say, well, I'm a little concerned. And what I'm concerned about is I need to prepare for the speech so I do the best possible job and I'll feel confident instead of fearful. Now, again, with each of these emotions, we want to hear the message and see if the message is appropriate. You may already be prepared. You may be as prepared as you can get. There's a limit to what you can do, right? There's a point where you have to have some faith. At that point, you might just have to say, you know what? This is a message. I need to change my perceptions, not my procedures. I'm prepared by my procedures. I know what to do. I know how to do it. But I got to stop focusing on this thing being the worst possible situation. I just need to decide to become confident now, to focus on it working instead of it not working. The third category of emotions, those of hurt feelings, give us a signal and a message that says, you have an expectation that's not been met, and you have a feeling of loss. I.e., you expected somebody to keep their word and they didn't, that hurt your feelings. Or you expected someone never to share something that you told them privately and they told somebody else. And now you feel hurt. You feel a sense of loss of intimacy with them or loss of trust. And that sense of loss is what creates that feeling of hurt inside of us. What do we need to do? It tells us immediately that we have to evaluate, is there really a loss here? Again, do we need to change our perception? Maybe you just didn't communicate to this person that when you told them this, you wanted them to keep this information private. Maybe you haven't lost anything. Maybe you just have to change your way of communicating your needs or, again, change your behavior. The next category is anger. That's the fourth category. And, again, emotions like irritation or feeling livid or furious or enraged or resentful, all of these fit into this category. Any of these emotions are simply signals giving you a message, and the message here is that an important rule that you have in your life has been violated by someone else or maybe even by you. See, when we think something's really important and somebody violates that rule, we get upset about it. How we deal with that upset will determine a great deal how much pain or pleasure we really experience in our lives and how close we get to other people or how much we push them away from us. In other words, if somebody violates your standards, that's the message. What you're supposed to do with that message is real simple. Communicate that you have a standard. Communicate that you know it's only your rule. It isn't necessarily their rule, but you need their help. So if we use the earlier example where you shared something in confidence with someone, but you didn't tell them it was in confidence, you expected them to know that, and you didn't just feel hurt, you felt angry about it, then the bottom line is instead of beating that person up, you need to go to that person and communicate in a different way. Right? Change the way you're communicating. Change your procedure. And say, you know you didn't understand this to be private, but this is really important to me, and you need to deal with it as quickly as possible. Anger is usually an outgrowth of hurt. In other words, when you're hurt, you have a feeling of loss, something you expected didn't work out. When you're angry, it's because it's something you think is really important that wasn't handled, or you've got a lot of hurts that have built up and you've not expressed them, you've not communicated them. So anger is usually a signal that something you believe is really important has been violated by someone or yourself, or that you've had a lot of hurts that you've not expressed that have built up until their anger. How do you deal with it? Change your perception. Maybe this person wasn't trying to hurt you at all. Change your procedure. Communicate better what your real needs are, or change your behavior. Tell people up front, hey, this is private. Promise me you won't share those with anybody because it's real important to me. Either way, you'll get out of your anger quickly. It's simply a signal that says you need to clarify with other people what your rules are and get them to agree to meet them, or you need to compromise them possibly. You know, some things you get angry about, you're going to get angry about for the rest of your life. And you better identify those things and realize that those are just your standards. They're not everybody's standards. And if you go around being upset because everyone doesn't live by your rules, you're going to be upset your whole life. So again, maybe you need to change your perceptions, change your rules, so that life is a lot simpler and a lot less painful for you. The fifth category of emotions, frustration. These action signals are telling you need to change your approach to achieving your goal. Whatever you're going after, you're not going to get it the way you're doing it right now. That's why you're frustrated. You keep trying to get the same result by doing the same thing over and over again. There was a definition given a long time ago about insanity. They said insanity is attempting to get a new result by doing the same thing over and over again. It'll never work. So you've got to change your approach. When you feel frustrated, just know, hey, that's a message. I've got to change my approach. I need to be more flexible in this situation. Category number six, disappointment. If you start to feel disappointed, that's a signal. And that signal is bringing you a message. And the message is that you need to realize that an expectation you had, an outcome you're going after, is not going to probably happen unless you change your expectation and make it more appropriate for the situation at hand. In other words, maybe you wanted something to happen in too short a period of time. Realize disappointment says you need to change your expectations. You need to change simply your view of things and come up with a more appropriate outcome for the time that you have involved, the people you have involved, the situation you have involved. So that's the message. Listen to it. Utilize it. Don't keep re-experiencing disappointment and stacking it until you feel overloaded, overwhelmed, or hopeless, or inadequate, which are emotions we'll talk about later. But first, let's talk about the next one. The seventh major category of emotions are guilt or regret emotions. Hey, when you've got feelings of guilt or regret, a lot of people say, well, don't feel guilty about anything. Garbage. Guilt serves you if you hear the message. And the message of guilt is really simple. It says you violated one of your own standards, and you must do something immediately to ensure that you're not going to violate again in the future. That's why you have the pain of guilt. Now, what most people do is they do one or the other. They either deny the guilt, take themselves out of it, and don't feel guilty at all, which, you know, I agree you shouldn't stay in guilt, but if you just deny the guilt and don't get the message, the guilt's going to come back. It'll get you sooner or later. It's back there. It's deep. It's dark. It'll get you. So with that fear, maybe you should turn that fear into getting the message instead of being overwhelmed and, again, surrendering to guilt. That's the other extreme. People just walk around and they allow themselves then to feel inferior for the rest of their life. They feel so regretful about what they once did. That is not the purpose of guilt. It's to make sure you clean up your act. It's to make sure that you don't violate this again. It's that you make things right when you screw up. That's what you got to do. Now, sometimes you can't. Sometimes someone has passed away or something's occurred where you feel guilty about something that happened in the past you really can't change. The only thing you can change is your present and future behaviors. When you do that, you can let go of the guilt. But that's the message it offers you. And again, when you immediately feel the signal, what do? You identify the signal and you realize, hey, I'm feeling regret or I'm feeling guilt. Secondly, you appreciate the message. It's a message that says you need to change something, either your perception or your procedures. Maybe you're feeling guilty about something you shouldn't feel guilty about at all. Have you ever done that? I know I have. Like, I felt guilty one time because I didn't help somebody feel happy enough. I used to run around. If everybody around me wasn't happy, I'd feel guilty if I felt good. How stupid. We don't want to fall into that category. You might want to change your rules or your perceptions. Or you might need to change your procedures again. Maybe the procedure is you feel guilty about the way you communicated to somebody. You were too harsh. Go back and clean it up. Say, hey, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do this. I really regret what I said. I was wrong. Boy, the guilt will disappear. Or change your behavior in the future. Change the way you're going to communicate to that person or people like them. Any one of these three changes, again, will immediately eliminate the guilt, and then guilt has served a good purpose, hasn't it? It's kept you on track. It's moved you forward. It's made you a better person. That's why it's there. Utilize it. Don't wallow in it. Let's go to category number eight. Inadequacy. Boy, if you feel inadequate, those are any of those emotions, again, that make you feel like you're less than. Feelings of being unworthy, for example, would be inadequate feelings. Whenever you feel this emotion or emotion like it, get excited. Appreciate it's offering you a message, and the message it's offering you is simple. It's saying you need to do something to get better in this category right away. It doesn't mean you have to be perfect at it. Inadequacy just says you've got to do something. Don't sit on your duff anymore. You're feeling inadequate because you haven't done anything to be really good in this area. Now, the first thing you've got to do is, as you go through this process, is ask yourself, is this really an appropriate emotion? That is, am I really inadequate, or do I need to change the way I'm perceiving things? Maybe I got some rules that say, in order for me to be adequate, you know, I have to go on the dance floor and outdo John Travolta. You know, that's probably inappropriate perceptions. You need to change the perceptions. Or it may be changing the procedures, which is, I need to prepare myself by doing something right now to get better. One thing you could do is just go practice. One thing you do is go out and initiate some communication. So inadequacy is a message to get up and do something to become better or to change your criteria. to look at what you're doing and make it easier for yourself to feel adequate. You probably got rules that are too harsh. Now, category number 9. This is one of the categories that I think immobilizes and destroys more people's lives than virtually any of the others combined. And that is a feeling of being overloaded or overwhelmed or hopeless or depressed. They all fit together. I use overloaded to make it sound simpler. Because if you say, gosh, I'm depressed, you'll immediately feel much more intensity than if you say I'm overloaded. The key here is to realize that this is a signal. When you feel hopeless, depressed, overwhelmed, or overloaded, the message that's offering you is that you need to reevaluate what's most important to you in this situation. Sit down right now and decide what is absolutely important, what's a necessity for you versus what's a desire. Write down all the things that are most important for you to accomplish. Then, 2, put them in order of priority. And then 3, take the first one on your list and do something about it. It's the same thing with depression, the same thing for being hopeless. Sit down and saying, okay, instead of saying it's hopeless, I need to change my state, 1. That's always the message of all these emotions. 2, I got to clarify what's most important to me. Write it all out. 3, what's the order of the importance? And 4, what's the first thing on my list? Let me go handle that. The minute you go handle anything and you deal with one simple issue, your brain can handle it, and as soon as you handle that situation, you will feel like you're in control of your world. You will not feel overloaded. You will not feel overwhelmed. You will feel like there's hope, and you won't feel depressed. Your self-esteem grows when you do something to take control of events instead of having events take control of you. And all you have to do to take control of events is chunk them down. Pick one thing and master it. The message is simple. You're trying to do too much in too short a period of time. You're looking at the whole world and expecting everything to be perfect overnight, and you're feeling like you can't handle it all. Chunk it down. Here's the final category. Category 10, feeling lonely. Have you ever felt really lonely? Gosh, I don't think there's anybody alive who hasn't. But what does it mean when you feel lonely? What is the message that you should get from that signal? I think the message is really simple. What we really need at that moment, the message is telling us, we need a certain connection with people. The challenge with that message is a lot of times people take the word connection or the idea of the need for a connection with another human being and they make it into a sexual connection or instant intimacy. And then they feel frustrated because even when they have that, they still feel lonely. What we really need to do is identify what kind of connection. Maybe you do need an intimate connection. Maybe you just need some basic friendship or someone to listen to or somebody to laugh with or someone to talk to. It's real important when we feel lonely just say, hey, this is really neat. What's great about being lonely is it says I really care about people. I love to be with people. And I need to find out in what way I want to be with somebody right now. And then take an action immediately to go in the direction we want. In other words, all 10 of these emotions are a message to our brain to say, hey, what you're doing right now isn't working, and you need to change it. You need to change your perception, change what criteria you're using, your way of looking at things that makes you feel this way, because your perception's not appropriate, or change the way you're communicating. You're not communicating things in a way where people know your needs, or just change your behavior. What you're doing isn't working. Change your approach. Every feeling you have, good or bad, is not based on the actual reality of life, but rather your interpretation as to what things mean. And remember, nothing in life has any meaning except the meaning you give it. So if you don't like the way you're feeling, change the meaning. If somebody passes away, you really cared about them, and they die. You can feel really bad. You can feel disappointed. You can feel frustrated. You can feel angry. You can feel hurt. You can feel sad. And all those are appropriate emotions. But make sure you take a message from it. And the message you've got to eventually come out with is, what's an empowering way of looking at this? What else could this mean? Maybe it doesn't mean that I've just lost somebody. Maybe it means this person has gone someplace they need to be. Or maybe this means my connection will be even stronger with them now than when they were here. Maybe this means I will value my own life and give more while I'm here because I realize that life is delicate. Choose meanings that empower you in life instead of assuming that meanings that disempower you. It's a final message to remember.